And our next bill up is House Bill 3374, so we'll go into a work session on that House bill. Counsel, tell us about the original bill and where we are today.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the original bill concerned harassment, and there are some amendments before the committee that would replace the original content of the bill. And I would remind the committee that I think that the provisions of the original bill were largely dealt with in a couple other bills, 2273, et cetera. I would ask the committee to ignore the dash ones and the dash twos for the time being.
Not for this bill.
Mr. Chair, just before we get into these amendments, do we have the three-amendment rule in play here?
If I lose three, I'll buy donuts.
If I lose three, I'll buy donuts. Okay.
The dash ones.
See, I'm just calculating here.
The dash one amendments actually are problematic. We've done some discussions around, and it looks like they get into domestic violence issues. It really can be pretty hairy, and things are fairly quiet in this particular area, so we're going to leave that alone. The dash twos have a fiscal impact and are a single-shot issue about public indecency, and we have another bill relating to sex offenses where this can be brought up as a single policy issue to be discussed, because it does have a fiscal impact, and it's a worthwhile issue, but it's significant.
On the dash one, since it looks like we're going to be tabling them.
Yes.
I read through this last night, and I can see by taking in that definition, it seems to bring it in line with, is it the Family Abuse Act?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I believe that is it, Mr. Chairman, Representative Prozanski. The intent of the dash ones was to address a situation currently in the criminal code. There are three different statutes that define what a domestic relationship is for the purposes of domestic violence, and they are very similar, but they are slightly different, which my understanding was that was causing some consternation to, for example, police officers that needed to determine whether or not they were entering a possible domestic violence situation. But, again, it is probably something that we may need to address in more detail later on.
Because it's such a sensitive area, we'd want to allow some more discussion. And we've gotten some feedback. I mentioned this, I think, before. You may have been in the room. Maybe you already hear Representative Bowman, but we want to be very careful about the language in the domestic violence law. And since we've not had enough feedback on that, we've decided to leave well enough alone on that until we get some more feedback. And if we do, we still have some Senate bills coming over that we can look at.
Mr. Chair, I guess one thing just to note, when I went through the definition for family or household members under ORS 107.705, it says that it would apply to anyone who's ever cohabitated. And my concern there was, is it ever, meaning how far past, and cohabitated, I don't know if that means if I was in college and had three roommates, if we would be considered cohabitating as compared, because there's another definition about where there's more intimate relationships within that broad definition. And so just one thing that I think we want to keep in mind for the future.
Well put. Thank you. Now, we do have the dash three amendments in front of us. And, Counsel, would you tell us about those?
Mr. Chairman, this has to do with two crimes. One is resisting arrest, which is a Class A misdemeanor, and the other is interfering with a peace officer, which is and it's also a Class A misdemeanor. And what this does is it's really a clarification of the language. The language that is being deleted is language that says this section does not apply in situations in which, and then the deleted portion is a peace officer is making an arrest. What that has led to is some situation. The original intent, as I understand it, of that subsection 3 was to say that if you're charging a person with resisting arrest, that we're trying to prevent the offender from being doubled up with two charges, both resisting arrest and interfering with a police officer. In practice, what has happened is that the language, a peace officer is making arrest, has been construed a bit too broadly, and so what this would do is simply provide that if the activity constitutes resisting arrest under that statute, then the person cannot be charged with interfering with a peace officer. But if the activity did not constitute an offense under the other statute, then they could be charged under this crime of interfering with a peace officer. My understanding is it does go back to the original intent of that language.
I want to move to dash threes. This is actually a bill that I brought forward, I think it was last session. And after reading, I think it does read a lot cleaner and clearer, and it's probably much easier for officers in the field to be able to apply where someone interferes with a peace officer as compared to constituting resisting arrest. And just for the committee members, a person can resist not only their own arrest, but a third person's arrest. So in other words, if you have a friend that's being hooked up and you interfere with that, you also can be charged with resisting arrest. So that's already covered under existing law.
All right. Representative Brzezinski moves to dash three amendments. Is there further discussion? Yes, Representative Gomez.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I do have a question. So does this, I actually thought I had it figured out until the Vice Chair explained it. So I need to go back a little bit. It was my impression that the difference between interfering and resisting arrest was whether or not an arrest resulted from the activity. And based on your explanation, I think I'm a bit more confused than I was originally.
If I may, if you have an officer that's engaged with another person and conducting an investigation, and if you, Representative Bowman, went in and engaged in the middle of that and kept the officer from continuing their lawful duty of this other investigation, you would be interfering with the peace officer at that point, and that would constitute the crime that was passed 2 years ago. What we didn't want to see is where you would double up on the charging of getting resisting arrest if you're resisting your own arrest or someone else's arrest, and then get the second charge of interfering with that arrest, because that's already covered by state law.
And does this follow up on the legislation last session that had to do with if I'm standing on my porch and the police officer is involved in some activity outside my house, that I would also, I could also be charged with interfering with police action?
Well, that's what you do.
Yeah.
It depends on where you're at and what you're doing. I mean, if you're in their face and you're keeping them from conducting their job, that's one thing. If you're on your porch some distance away yelling and screaming, I'd say no.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. We have the dash one, excuse me, the dash three amendment in front of us, and we have a motion to adopt it. Is there objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, the dash three amendment is added to House Bill 3374. We next have in front of us the dash four amendment. Counsel, would you explain that to us, please?
Mr. Chairman, this is also a technical fix. There is a statute that provides that certain provisions are not intended to preempt any local regulation of graffiti or graffiti-related activities. And there is no criminal statute that specifically talks about graffiti. Those are rather prosecuted under criminal mischief statutes. And so what this amendment would add to that provision is that those provisions are also not intended to preempt any prosecution under the criminal mischief statutes. It's a clarification, as I understand it. I don't think that it changes anything substantively.
Representative Brzezinski.
I'm going to go ahead and move the dash fours, and I'll also say at the same time, basically, I don't know if this is actually needed, but it just gives clarification. So a person could, in fact, still be charged with criminal mischief in first, second, or third degree. And if it is, fits the definition of that conduct, fits the definition of graffiti, they could also have that charge filed against them.
And your motion would be to adopt the dash fours as an addition to the bill. Each of these has been drafted as though it's a gut and stuff, but this would be an addition to the bill.
Yes.
As amended so far.
Right now the only bill, I just want to, for point of clarification, the only thing we do have is the dash three.
Dash three, that's correct. But each of these is written like a gut and stuff, so I need to make it clear, once we did the first gut and stuff, the additional amendments, if they're added, are not substituting for what we've already adopted.
Currently, the bill, as we have it now before we pass it, would be the dash threes.
Correct. So the motion is to add the dash fours to the dash three amendment. Is there just further discussion? Is there objection? Seeing no objection, the dash four amendment is added to the bill, which has been so far amended by dash three. We next have dash five in front of us. Council, could you explain that?
Mr. Chairman, this is a little bit more than a technical fix, but currently there is a Class A misdemeanor on the books of unlawful entry into a motor vehicle. A person commits that crime if they enter a motor vehicle without permission with the intent to commit a crime inside that vehicle. Now, this amendment doesn't change that law. What this does provide is a second degree of that crime that simply provides that a person commits that crime by entering a motor vehicle without consent. And what that's trying to get at is as follows. The current law requires that the prosecutor prove that the person entering a motor vehicle without permission intended to do a crime. That doesn't allow prosecution for situations where a person would enter a motor vehicle, for example, to sleep in the motor vehicle. And so, and there are some cases out there like that. And so what this would do is allow for a lesser degree of unlawful entry into a motor vehicle to address that situation.
Or, for instance, you have someone sitting in the front seat in front of the stereo, and they have their tools in their pocket. They've been caught before they started to cut the wires. You might sometimes be able to prove that they intended to steal the stereo, but other times you caught them too early, and so there's no crime. Or is that an attempt?
Would you not charge them with attempt?
Depends on, I guess, what you could prove from having a pair of wire cutters in your pocket. Resident Przanski?
Mr. Chair, I understand the intent of what this amendment would do, but I think it has much broader ramifications because it does not require the intent to commit a crime, which we have now. I think your example could be shown with everything in their pockets that they're doing, that they do have an intent to do something in there, to commit a crime inside. My concern with the amendment as it's drafted and its broadness is if you have a child who's roughhousing with another person and reaches into the vehicle to hit their friend on the arm or whatever, they would technically be in violation of this. And so I think that the threshold of just going through there is too great.
Enters has the meaning in 164272.
Is that breaking the plane?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry?
Breaking the plane of the window.
I'm not sure. I believe it's entering with any part of the body or any object connected with the body.
Then you got criminal mischief.
We could say completely enters a motor vehicle.
Well, so what if a car that's parked like, you know, 10 cars from mine looks just like mine, and I'm in the parking lot, hands full, looks like my car, I get inside. I don't think I look like a thief, but chances are I could be prosecuted for unlawful entry. Motor vehicle. I'm done.
Go ahead. Knowing that the person does not have the consent of the owner of the vehicle or of another person, you could also say knowing that the vehicle, knowing which vehicle it is. What were you going to
say? Mr. Chairman, one way to possibly get around some of these concerns would be to borrow some language from the burglary statutes and modify it a bit to provide enters and remains in a motor vehicle.
Just exclude Representative Bowman
specifically. If we could do that for all laws, I'd be happy, yes. Thank you.
Mr. Rice. Hello.
Chairman, it's Jim Rice, working Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I'm married to a do-gooder, and she sees people's lights on, and she's the kind of person that wants to open the door, and I'm always going, don't, they have a burglar alarm, but she doesn't listen to me very much. And I see that there's potential for getting at people entering cars for non-criminal purposes. Even police officers sort of reaching in and turning off ignitions, and there's a wide variety of circumstances that we may not want to address with this particular bill, and I just raise those, and perhaps this bill needs a little narrowing.
Well, that's a good point. I was wondering about completely enters and remains within a motor vehicle.
I think that's going to get beyond the cursory entries.
Don't sleep, then.
Right.
Then you go to jail.
Since this is your bill, and I assume these were amendments drafted at your request, what are we attempting to reach? Is it the example that you gave?
It's a form of trespass that I'm really getting at. When you get up in the morning and you find somebody climbed into your car and slept all night in it, and maybe left a mess, and you're just ticked off. Or you also just told someone to stay out of your car, and they choose to get into it for whatever reason, and they stay there. But the main point is instead of sleeping under a bridge, someone decides to sleep in your car.
But if your car is locked and closed up, I guess if they broke in, then they're breaking in, and if they left a mess, That's offensive littering. That's a crime. I mean.
Well, let's hear it from the district attorney, Mr. Penn, as to if you have any comments on this.
I want to know how many of these you're gonna actually try. Now we're back to him.
I don't want to go back to that.
Mr. Chairman, it's Dale Penn, Marion County District Attorney. As far as dealing with Representative Bowman's issue, I think under those facts, clearly she is not entering the vehicle knowing she does not have the consent. She's entering the vehicle believing it is her car or whichever car she was getting into. I see this as being most helpful in the situation of the lesser included of the crime, where you do run into problems of showing the intent because you're catching the person immediately upon entry into the vehicle. And that's where I see this being most helpful, because car clouts are an expensive problem in communities. The difficulty you're running into is trying to confine it so you don't run into the Good Samaritan and these other issues. And so I think these words you've tried to put in, complete leaners and enter and remain, are all good steps towards doing that. But I see the benefit of this, of trying to get at catching the car clouter in the act. You can't tie into other property, because these things do happen, you know, 20 or 30 a night. And so that's the benefit of it.
Here, Representative Pozanski.
Dale, I mean, since you're up here, I mean, when we put in the other bill that came law of basically entering the vehicle, I mean, to me, the conceptual part is that if they're there and they don't have the intent or consent for them to be there, you know, they're more than likely there for no good. And it would seem that, I mean, unless you caught them immediately at the time they entered the car, they're going to do some step or some act to either try to take the radio out, go through the glove box or something, to the point of where that intent should be able to be shown to the jury. I mean, from the reports I'm getting from state police on the coast, where a lot of this has happened in the past, they're saying the law works very well. And at least in our county, I've not heard from Parker Road's office, and I know the cases that are coming through my court, it's just gone right through with no problem. So I'm not sure if the problem is to the point of where, I mean, it just seems that we need to really ratchet down the language if we're going to move forward on this. And I'm wondering at this time if it's something that's so necessary at this point.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Brzezinski, I do agree with you that the bill from last session has gotten at the majority of the problem. I do think there are situations where you run into where you aren't able to show the proof, and I guess that was the intent with Section 1. I guess one other alternative is to simply look at criminal trespass, the C misdemeanor, the lowest criminal trespass that you have, and add vehicle to that one. And maybe that's a way to get at it. I don't have my code in front of me, and so you'll have to look at it and make sure that it might be.
In your mind?
I think it's
1245.
Yeah.
64245.
Would say enter remains unlawfully, enter upon premises or a motor vehicle. It's a C misdemeanor, but.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a good suggestion as to dealing with this. I mean, we are talking to Class C, but the other's only Class B. They're going to fall on the same rating for prosecution for follow-through, and it seems to be a very clean way of addressing that issue.
I agree. Let's do this. Let's pass on the Dash 5 amendments. No motion's been made on them. Councilman, I'm going to ask you to have a draft made of an amendment which would
deal with this issue of criminal trespass and entering and remaining unlawfully within a motor vehicle. That's only one that I've withdrawn so far. We're keeping track here.
Mr. Chair, before we move on to the dash six, can I go back for a second and ask a question about the dash three?
Sure.
Does the dash three, in fact, change current law so that passive resistance or civil disobedience is now prohibited with this change?
We were careful, if I may. I can answer that. I was around when we were dealing with these statutes in judiciary a few years back. We went through true civil disobedience, the lying down, and tried to craft it so that if you were lying down, the officers had to pick you up. That was okay. On the other hand, if they were trying to pick you up and you started swinging at them or whatever, doing something physically, we made a good record on that too, that became at least interference, if not resistance. But you had to be doing something physically to resist or to interfere. But just being passive was not, because we were trying to respect what I call the traditional civil rights, passive resistance, where you just say, we're protesting and we'll not move.
Mr. Chair, we have also, when the bill was before the committees last time, I made that a very clear record, because in my community there are a lot of people that do want to have passive resistance under the MLK approach or the Gandhi approach of just basically just being there as a presence but not doing anything physically to in the way of waving of arms or swinging and stuff, and that was made clear. And that's the other reason that I wanted to make certain that the law itself of the crime of interfering would not include a passive civil disobedience protester. So if an order comes in to move, that they're not going to be cited for this particular crime. So that was made on the record 2 years ago.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the clarification.
Now, moving on to the dash six. Counsel, could you explain those to us?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, under current law, a police officer can arrest in a variety of situations, and generally if a felony is committed or if a misdemeanor is committed in their presence. Now, if a Class A misdemeanor or a felony is not committed in the officer's presence, but the officer has probable cause to believe it's been committed, an arrest can still occur. But if a Class B or Class C misdemeanor is committed not in the officer's presence, then the officer is restricted under current law to simply cite and release. What this amendment would do is to provide that a peace officer could go ahead and arrest a person, provided that the other requirements were met, probable cause or a warrant, for any crime, regardless of whether or not it was committed in their presence.
I think it also goes broader than that. I read through this last night, and looking at the D, which would be the new D on lines 19, it says for any infractions in an officer's presence. So the way I read this is if a person is MIP, minor in possession, they're going to be able to arrest them. Am I misreading that? Because it takes out violations.
I wondered about lines 19 through 21, counsel.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't request that
language.
Yeah, and that raised me a lot of concern.
What I suggest is, if we're otherwise in agreement, that we delete the changes made in lines 19 through 21 and redact to the original law. And that's Representative Pozanski?
Yeah, I'm very uncomfortable with it right now. I'd have to see it again and work through it. The other thing about opening it up to where arrest can occur for a B and C misdemeanor, I also have some concerns with that because I know in larger counties such as Multnomah County and Lane County, and I'm not sure here in Salem what their policy is now, but they are not in those two counties accepting Class C misdemeanors and so into the jail. So you're going to see a disparity across the state as to, depending on what county you're in, as to you being potentially going into the jail or not going to the jail. And I guess I'd like more discussions as to why we want to open this up to these other levels.
Mr. Penn, you had some comment to offer. Excuse me. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Dale Penn, Marion County District Attorney. I do not see the Dash 6 amendments really having any kind of impact on jail issues, because the legal authority is, and on these offenses, these are going to be done by citation in almost every circumstance. The issue is, do you have to go through a paper warrant process, or is the officer able to make a probable cause arrest based upon all the information that's available? Right now, what the officer has to do is do a report, submit an affidavit to an office, then we're going to have to process that affidavit and the report, set it up in a motion, send it to a judge, and have the judge review it. And so what happens now is you have these huge timelines that come into play, and these are unfortunately very low priority situations for the courts. And so we will have probable cause for an arrest for a B or a C misdemeanor at this time. This processing takes place, and these can go up to months before a warrant is actually issued. And you have victims, community members very upset about the delay. No real follow-up then once the warrant is issued to actually go back and now initiate this case. It really bogs down the system. Now, in practical effect, what would happen instead of a custodial arrest in most of these situations, I think you would see a citation for this B or C misdemeanor. That case would come into the system at that time if there was probable cause there to justify the arrest, and then it would be processed as any other case. But you're pulling out all of the paperwork process that really doesn't apply in any of the other cases, and I really don't understand why we have this paperwork process for a B and a C misdemeanor. So I see it as removing some of the bureaucracy and making the system more responsive. You will still have the workload impacts, you'll still have the issues at jail, and I think that's why you'll see citations almost exclusively for these, but it authorizes the officer, if there's probable cause, to make an arrest, in most situations, arrest by citation.
If I may, and then we'll hear from Representative Bowman. It also, one of my concerns is that we've been dumbing down Class B and Class C misdemeanors over the last few years, and that's why we see a reverse pressure to make everything a felony or a Class A misdemeanor. And if we get serious, and I grant you there's going to be county issues on the citations process and county's issues on whether any jail space will ever be used and whether prosecutions will be brought, but at the rate we're going, we might as well take Class B and C misdemeanors off the books, and so people have no consequences at all for fairly small crimes, and we'll wait till they hit the big time, and then we'll throw them in jail for a year or get them for a felony. And this is part of a process where we start reinvigorating the B and C misdemeanor and say, maybe there ought to be some small consequence. You can be arrested and something can happen quickly. And maybe because of that, we'll prevent people from moving up the ladder, the step ladder or the stair step to higher crimes. This is, granted, this one little piece isn't going to do it on its own. But over time, one of the things I'm trying to do is to get us to move back to the misdemeanor side. And that may sound ironic, but the reality is you can't make everything a felony. We've moved driving while suspended, if I remember, from a Class C felony to a Class A misdemeanor under certain circumstances. And someday, when it's politically correct, we'll move bigamy from a Class C felony to probably a Class C misdemeanor. I mean, it should be unlawful, but saying that we're going to send someone to the state pen for 5 years, I don't think is realistic. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, that's my little speech on the topic of, but if the police can't arrest for B and C, they're going to try to find an A, or we're going to wait till someone commits an A. That's just my perspective on it, and this clarifies bureaucracy. I agree with Rep. Prozanski, though. I don't know why 19 through 21 on page 1 were put in there. That was not the original intention.
Mr. Chair, I agree with that.
Representative
Change also.
Had a comment or a question.
I had a question, Mr. Chair. If, in fact, now, my understanding is, so currently if you're given a citation, there's no reason to search someone unless you have reason to believe they have a weapon. And so if you're just giving them a ticket and one day they show up in court, you're changing the whole process. If, in fact, now you have an opportunity to arrest someone, and
I'm assuming that you don't hold them until the trial date. So they would be arrested and then released on their own recognizances, probably. So how does that speed up the process?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Bowman, I guess I need to draw a distinction between a citation, because that's one process of how you effect an arrest for a crime, all right? And there are all kinds of legal ramifications for a crime. These are crimes. Now, B and C misdemeanor, they're crimes. So they can authorize search incident to arrest, even though there might be a citation involved. However, if you have a situation where it is a violation, and that's why lines 19 through 21 become, those are different rules for violations and infractions. That's when there is no authority to search someone when you're giving them a violation or infraction citation. And so if it's a traffic infraction only, well, then there isn't the authority to take into physical custody or to do a search or those types of things. But if it is a crime and there's a basis to take into custody, well, those powers are already there. So the citation thing isn't the issue. It is whether or not it's a violation or a crime, I think, that gets at the issues you're concerned about.
All right. Chair would entertain a motion that we adopt the Dash 6 amendments with the deletion of lines 19 through 21 on page 1.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I don't know if you can do a deletion because that's part of the bill. I mean, are you saying we turn it back to...
Deletion of the changes, excuse okay. me, the deletion of the changes in lines 19 through 21.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Simmons moves adoption of the Dash 6 amendments as an addition to the bill, and with a deletion of the statutory changes proposed for lines 19 through 21, and I'll say quickly, other than numbering changes, if that's necessary, the statute does...
Correct.
There's some numbering changes here.
Certainly.
Further discussion on the motion? Any objection?
I object.
All right, we'll call the roll on that motion, please.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sunseri?
Yes.
Vice Chair Pozanski?
Mr. Chair, for clarification, that new D is going to read as it currently reads in statute.
Yes.
Okay. Aye.
Chair Mannix?
Aye. The motion is adopted. And finally, we have the Dash 7 amendments.
Mr. Chair, is this going to have to go to Ways and Means because of the fiscal impact?
At this point, no. And some of the amendments that have not been presented would have had Ways and Means impact, and they're going to be saved. Ones we've not discussed are going to be saved for other bills. Council, Dash 7?
Dash 7 has to do with the insanity defense. Currently, insanity is, of course, a defense, and it needs to be raised by the defendant or the defense attorney. Now, what the Dash 7 amendments allow is for the state, for the prosecutor, to raise that defense on behalf of the defendant in some cases. Now, as I understand it, the reasons for this are as follows. Sometimes there is a defendant who may be representing himself, for example, and has so many mental problems that they are unable to or unwilling to assert that defense. And some prosecutors apparently have wanted to be able to send that offender to the Oregon State Hospital for treatment, but you're unable to get there unless that defense has technically been raised. So what this would do is, in specified circumstances, enable the prosecutor to raise that defense on behalf of the defendant. And I would also mention that even if the defendant is represented by a defense attorney, my understanding of the law, although I've never been a defense attorney, is that even if the defense attorney says, I think that you should raise an insanity defense, if the defendant says, nope, we're not going to do it, of course, ethically, the defense attorney is bound by what his or her client wants to do. And the state would have to prove the insanity by a preponderance of the evidence, and only if the state had already proved the elements in the case.
This is a pretty complex, comprehensive issue, Mr. Chair.
It is.
Yeah, last night I got a question mark and wondering what this applies to. I mean, we're looking at, I understand the intent and why the state may want this. I mean, the court can already,
I think
raise a defense for the defendant if the court deems that the person's not fit or think that there's something there. I mean, I think the court has that authority. I definitely would like to hear from Mr. Penn and Mr. Rice, and I don't know if we've got a...
And they may not be ready to deal with this issue.
This is not a 10 or 15 minute issue.
Are you Mr. Penn? You are? Well, I'll ask Mr. Rice, too. This is a consequential matter, and I'm very sensitive to that.
Let me give you a two-minute overview, if I could. I know your time is precious here. Dale Penn, Marion County District Attorney. There is case law that prohibits a defense lawyer from asserting this defense unless his client agrees. I'll tell you about a case that I had here. There's a church three blocks down the street down here. See, old church, big tower. Had a man who, after being released from the jail, broke into that church because he believed, and broke into the safe of the church because he believed that the pastor of the church was a communist Chinese general who had a 1 million-man Chinese army displayed in or hidden in the state of Oregon, and so he needed to get the deployment plans out of this safe. That was his defense. Now, he would not assert mental disease or defect as a defense, and I was very troubled with this. I had fingerprints, I had everything I needed to prove this case, but what am I going to do with this individual? Send him to prison or not? There is a provision under the law where the court, by their own motion, may say, I believe this person is unable to aid and assist in their defense. Now, that is not the mental disease defense. That is saying they don't understand what's going on, and the court has some authority to step in, but basically that's a civil commitment process, 6 months maximum at a time, and there have been some restrictions placed on that. So there is no PSRB supervision, and there is no commitment other than this potential civil commitment process. This would allow the state, and in the case that I was describing, and that's been a few years ago when I had that, but to assert the defense for the state and to say that we have evidence that would justify that the jury not only should find that the burglary occurred, but that this person is unable to control their actions or unable to appreciate that what they did was a crime, and therefore they are guilty but insane, which would then allow the court to allow for a PSRB, Oregon State Hospital commitment. That would be the difference.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Penn, aren't you arguing both sides of the case if you do that?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Bowman, first of all, it would be my responsibility to prove the crime, and then I would be arguing to the jury that, ladies and gentlemen, really the motive here is mental disease or defect, and this is why. Now, we would not be able to do this in every case because we may not have evidence in every case that would show this, that this one guy I'm talking about, he'd stand up in court and tell everybody that's why he did this. But I guess it is happening more and more in other counties, and that's the reason for this coming forward, and people at least wanted to have an option because right now there is no option.
If I may follow up, Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Penn, I appreciate the desire to not incarcerate in prison someone who obviously has a mental health issue. But I guess I'm concerned that a prosecutor would now be in a position of providing a defense. I guess my concern is that we keep talking about the broadening powers of the district attorney's office, and this makes me a little nervous.
I think there's really no response to that. I think President Bowman has got a concern here. It has to do with the complexity and broadness, but I'd like to hear from Mr. Rice. Is this the best thing since mom's apple pie and ice cream?
Chairman Mannix, Jim Rice, Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Ice cream is my personal weakness, so no, I don't find that. I find this somewhat troubling, and I'd like to think about it a little bit.
Let me do this, then. And I, I, I,
yeah.
save us some time here. I would suggest that perhaps the criminal defense lawyers and the Juvenile Rights Project and the DA should talk about this issue. We do have a few bills coming in from the Senate with appropriate relating clauses. If some consolidated solution is found that's fair to all concerned, we can proceed with that. But it sounds to me like this is just premature, and we need to move House bills. So we'll back off on this. That's two.
But that wasn't my request.
President Brzezinski.
Mr. Chair, it looks like we're close to the end of the dash amendments. And I guess before we move it, there's a couple of things that we've asked to be changed, and I'm going to ask before we actually ship this out that we get those changes instead of sending it to the floor without seeing the...
Talking about the changes on 6?
6 is the one I'm most concerned with. And I thought there's another change that we're making, too, the criminal trespass part.
Well, we haven't done that yet. That's still not in the bill. We're going to see if something can be drafted. That's still pending.
And is that going to be folded into this one?
If it is, we'll bring it back. You know, yeah, it's not going to be done conceptually. If we're going to do that, we'll have to bring that back and look at it. But we may choose another vehicle for that, too.
Can we set this one over, and if we need to push it out at the end of the week, we can do that?
Get the amendment yes. Done? We're going to hear one more amendment, and then we'll set it over.
Another amendment?
Representative Simmons has one that we may want to talk about and then deal with on Thursday. Representative Simmons, do you want to tell us about your amendment? It's
yes,
from another
here.
Bill, but the concept is here.
Mm. And it would fit within this bill. It's a 3586-1 amendment that is before you.
It was distributed.
Yes.
We don't have that bill on the agenda.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. What bill are we talking about?
Senate bill. It's just an
amendment
to this.
It's an amendment to 3586, but now it's being considered as an amendment to this bill. You want to tell us about your idea?
Right. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Expansion of cougar and bear populations in the state is creating difficulties in many areas, and I have information from the Department of Fish and Wildlife expecting that population of cougars to be over 8,000 by 2008, from a current population somewhere over 4,000. And with this increasing conflict between humans and cougars specifically, and in many cases bears, it is costing a lot of money, but we do have some penalties on the books for individuals who are convicted of taking a cougar or bear. And it was originally Measure 18 language. It was provided a Class A misdemeanor upon conviction and a 5-year suspension of hunting privileges and then a permanent suspension for any subsequent convictions for that activity. And the amendment I have here before you reduces that to a Class C misdemeanor upon the upon conviction with a 1-year suspension of hunting privileges for the first and second offense and permanent suspension of hunting privileges for a third or any other offense.
I have that as a discussion point.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to say that in Gresham last year, we had a cougar on the playground, and we've got the Springwater Trail, and they've been sighted there, and I think that we've got a problem, and if this will do anything to help that, I'm certainly going to support it.
Chair, it doesn't remove the criminal, it's still a misdemeanor from an A to a C, however.
Well, I'm going to go ahead, Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative, why do we want to dummy down this to from an A to a C?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brzezinski, with the greatly increasing population, I think if I had my way, I would reduce it to a violation. People need to not be discouraged from protecting themselves and their property. And this is as far as I felt we could go currently, and that's why we have this amendment before you, as it is.
Chair, if I could.
Chair, Representative Brzezinski.
There is a defense called choice of evils that if you felt in a sense of you need to protect yourself or your family or property such as a livestock, that you would be able to raise that defense as to why you did it as compared to. I mean, it seems to me that we are talking, as the chair said, about dumbing down now.
not seeing the amendment, is this in relation to the initiative that was passed by the voters, was it 4 years ago?
1993. I believe it was in
May 18th. 94. I think it was 94.
94. I think, because it went in 95, if I remember correctly. Yeah. I guess, Mr. Chair, in due respect to Mr. Representative Simmons, I won't be able to support this type of amendment because it does, in fact, cuts what was done by the initiative process. And it seems to me that we've talked about, I don't know if this is the approach based on this limited information that we have today without having much more dialogue and the ability for individuals to be heard.
Mr. Chair.
Sure, Mr. Simmons.
We did some extensive hearings in the Water and Environment Committee and passed out two bills yesterday, but there are no bills there related to crime. And that's the reason I requested that we have it drafted for one of the bills here and before the committee.
Representative Gianella.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, committee. I serve on Water and Environment, and we heard a lot of testimony about people who were losing their pets, that the cougars were coming up into the yards. One lady, her pet had been killed, and she wasn't sure if it was still alive, and she needed to go out in the snow, but somebody told her she better take a gun just in case the cougar was still there. So the stories we were hearing were affecting the people that live in the area with cougars. And it's one thing to be faced, you know, situation where it's either you or the cougar. It's another thing to take care of it ahead of time and not wait until the family pet or the child is being attacked. So I think, I really think it's a necessary addition to this bill.
It is somewhat serendipity that I'd made the remarks earlier. When I'm talking about dumbing down, I've been talking about making everything a felony. I think we're reinvigorating this B and C misdemeanors to say that we're serious about lower-level law enforcement and that we don't have to make everything a Class A misdemeanor or a felony in order to get enforcement. It's going to be an issue over the next few years. I would suggest, Representative Simmons, that you consider perhaps a stair step here. You talked about 1 year on the first offense, and then you wait till the third offense for a permanent suspension. You might consider 1 year, 5 years, and then lifetime as a stair step. The reason I suggest that is that we're going to have to bring this back anyway to have this in a formal LC draft, and that might at least accommodate some concerns, although I think it will not accommodate all concerns. Representative Hansen and then Representative Pozanski.
Well, my concern is if we're trying to address the problem of too many bears or too many cougars, that creating it as a less, still a violation, but a lesser offense to hunt them seems to be just a real backdoor approach. If somebody if somebody really needs to defend, again, their property, their livestock, a pet, I think they should be allowed to. But to still, it's like we're condoning their action by making it a lesser crime, but it's still a crime, and I don't think that fits into just good. Good public safety policy.
Well, I guess part of it is proportionality, too, and a view of we as policymakers need to make a determination as to what is a proportionate sanction. And to me, I guess it depends on the perspective of each policymaker as to what's proportionate. Representative Pozanski, you wanted to make a comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I see it as dumbing down because not only are we reducing what the potential offense is, we're still going to maintain that the individual would and should be able to come in and use the choice of evils defense. So basically they got a double break there. And then I guess the part that I really scratched my head on is that why do we need to lessen the length of the suspension of the hunting privileges from what was passed by the voters, if this is actually out of that initiative process?
Representative Simmons.
I think it is a policy choice. Just yesterday, Representative Pozanski and I were discussing raising the speed limit and lowering the fines. But for those of us who may find ourselves visiting with an officer on the side of the road.
Here's what we'll do. We have this story. I wanted to give everybody a heads up.
since it's not been in front of you on this bill before, I'm going to ask that there be an LC draft prepared for probably Friday.
We may be able to get Thursday, Mr. Chairman.
I try for Thursday. And also, if we can get the LC drafts on the two prior amendments already done, as well as an LC draft on the trespass in the third degree for adding the vehicle, so we have that in front of us. And so what we'll do is we'll carry that over and we'll reconvene this on Thursday, and we should put a notice out for Thursday.
Sure.
This concludes the work session on House Bill 3374. Thank you for your patience. Carried over to Thursday. Next up is House Bill 2795. Oh, yes. We'll go into work session on House Bill 2795. We have two policy choices in front of us. One is the dash, well, we have three policy choices. One is to do nothing. The second is the dash one amendments, which is what I've called 2468, on using a firearm or carrying a firearm in the commission of a felony. And you have the original bill, which is 2795 as presented, which is a narrower range of serious offenses and then imposes strong sanctions for using, possessing, or discharging a firearm during the commission of this narrower range. At least that's the way I'm reading it when I say that. Counsel, did you want to add any a neutral explanation?
No. That's fine.
Well, here we go.
Mr. Chair.
President Sinceri.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2795.
All right, Representative Gianella moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2795. Those are in front of us. Now, that was a compromised version. I hope some people understand that. And Representative Atkinson is happy to have the clean version, meaning without the amendments. But the chair is also happy to accommodate the committee. So, discussion on that motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fazansky.
I just want to make sure everyone knows, and this is on the record before this vote's taken. Under Section 1, under the A, which starts on line A, it says 2 years. If the person possessed a firearm during the commission of a crime, and basically it goes on as to the court imposing that term of imprisonment, blah, blah, blah. So let's look at what that includes. It includes driving while suspended or revoked as a felony, cheating at gambling, theft in the third degree, I believe, a criminal trespass in the first degree, if I'm not mistaken. Is that a clue? No. Oh, well, the DWS is.
Right.
Yeah.
The cheating was.
I believe cheating is a Class C felony.
I don't have my
correct
guidelines, but there's a heck of a lot of stuff here that I think you may want to consider as to what you're just basically going to impose a penalty of 2 years beyond what is already there. So I didn't bring my guidelines down with me, but everything that's on the guidelines, you can pick and choose from it.
Do you want to see this? Mr. Chairman, I withdraw my motion.
But Representative Fazansky was just getting rolling here. All right. Representative Gianella has withdrawn her motion to adopt the Dash 1 amendment. We still have the bill in front of us.
Mr. Chairman.
Gianella.
I move House Bill 2795 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gianella moves House Bill 2795 to the floor without any amendments with a due pass recommendation. Do you want a discussion motion?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure others do.
No.
President Bowman?
Well, Mr. Chair, obviously, we're going to have a prison boom in the state like we've never seen before if, in fact, this bill actually ends up becoming law. I'm sure there's no doubt that this bill has to go immediately to Ways and Means, where it will probably die a very fretful death. But I just think that what we're doing here is putting people, we're creating some significant mandatory minimum prison sentencing. And obviously this is a policy issue for this committee. And I would ask this committee to think about all the additional new crimes that we've created in the last 4 months and decide whether or not you want to start on the path of having 50% of our general fund budget now going directly to the Department of Corrections, while the other 50% goes to K-12 education. I would hope that as a policy decision, we're looking at everything in context. So that's all I have to say.
Colleagues, I note that we have a referral to Ways and Means noted on the original bill without amendments. So, Representative Gianella, I'm going to ask if you would agree to have your motion changed to be a motion to send the bill to Ways and Means for the due pass recommendation.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2795 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
I apologize for the oversight. So, further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Simmons.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really believe that we need to make some strong statements about people who use firearms in their criminal activity, in the commission of crimes. And I think we should proceed down this road, and I think we should also back it up with some advertising, such as was demonstrated to us in the presentation from Representative Atkinson, so people know that we are very serious about people who commit crimes and these guns when they commit those crimes. It will not be tolerated in the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Krasanski.
I do want to second the motion as to encouragement that Representative Simmons has said about really getting word out on any type of enhancement type penalties when it comes to guns, because we all know that we don't want to see that happening. It's kind of interesting that basically what we're looking at doing is putting more laws on the books though, instead of advertising what's already there. When you look under ORS 161610, which is our current gun enhancement statutes, I think it would be great to just be getting PSAs out on that, and we would be able to, one, get a bill out of here that actually would pay to get funded to do for $100,000, $200,000, something that would be within the grasp of Ways and Means to do. The reality, we can sit here, we can talk, put our positions on the board. I don't think there's anyone on this committee that's going to say that we think it's appropriate for people to use guns in crime, because it's not. But the bottom line is that this bill is destined to die and will die when it goes down to Ways and Means because of the financial impact of 10, 20 life. I mean, unless we're going to start building two or three additional prisons for what the impact's going to be. So I would encourage us to think about really sending something to Ways and Means that we can actually have faith in and being funded, and two, having the impact, I feel the impact that we can get from what California apparently seen from their PSA campaign. So
that's
my two cents on this one.
President Gianella.
Yes, I believe it will be a deterrent, and I believe the advertising will get the word out, and I think it will eliminate a lot of problems in the future. And I don't think there will be as many people in prison. That's how I think it will be.
Further debate on the motion? The clerk will call the roll on the motion to send House Bill 2795 to Ways and Means of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Bowman?
No way.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
Boom.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sunseri?
Yes.
Vice Chair Brzezinski?
No.
Aye. The motion is carried. House Bill 2795 is sent to Ways and Means of the due pass.
Mr. Chair, a technical question. This is going to Ways and Means, so there's not the ability to do a minority report. Is that correct?
Correct.
This closes the work session on House Bill 2795. We'll go for another 10 minutes. I'm sensitive to the fact that members need to prepare for floor session. Some of these may go fast because
amendments may not be ready. We have in front of us House Bill 3103. Dash two amendments?
Conceptual amendment to those.
I'm looking for my copy of dash two, and I don't have it in front of me. So. Colleagues, we have, we'll go into work session on House Bill 3103. The dash two is the brandishing or firing a firearm while under the influence of intoxicants.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I want to move the dash threes.
All right, Representative Przanski moves the dash three amendments to House Bill 3103, which is possessing a firearm while under the influence of intoxicants.
Mr. Chair?
Excuse me.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's let Representative Przanski explain his motion, and then we'll hear from folks.
Chair and committee members, the dash threes reflect what is currently in law in almost 23 states. There's 23 states in this country that make it unlawful in some degree or some fashion to unlawfully carry a firearm while intoxicated. Those are listed on the sheet that I've given out to everyone just now. There are some exceptions as to when you look at Louisiana, they're basically revoked the concealed weapon permit if you're under the influence of intoxicants at the time that you're carrying. In Mississippi, you can't sell or give a ammunition or a gun to the person that's under the influence. And then there's two states. I did hear someone say the other day, I thought Washington State was quite interesting, that you cannot hunt as well as in Virginia if you're under the influence of intoxicants. I know what the dash twos do is basically requires another act of pulling the gun out, waving it around, or something to that effect.
Or firing it.
Or firing it. And I guess the point of that you already have a potential charge for firing the gun. It could be reckless endangering as one of them. And I feel that it's time for this state to make a stand as these other states that are listed at the bottom as to making certain that we realize that and treat a firearm the same as we do an automobile or a motor vehicle, that a person that's under the influence of a toxicant, be it liquor, controlled substance, or whatever combination thereof, should be held accountable to the same level as if they are driving a motor vehicle under that same condition.
Representative Gianella.
Chairman, Representative Przanski, would line 16 of the original bill, 3103,
It's deleted by...
That's deleted.
It would be, we would, the dash threes would be the bill. So in other words, what you saw in the original printed bill would go away,
right.
And we would be dealing with the dash threes,
okay.
Which basically is only dealing with one issue, and that is basically people being in possession of a firearm when they're under the influence of intoxicants. And the measures that would be used and the test is basically the same as if you were driving under the influence of intoxicants.
Representative Simmons and then Mr. Horton has something for us.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand the intent here, but I'm a little bit concerned. I do a lot of, when I'm not in the legislature, and I get it every chance I get. You take my horses and mules and go back in the wilderness or Hell's Canyon or the Eagle Cap, and generally I've got a rifle and a scabbard on the side of my horse, and sometimes a pistol's either on my hip or over the saddle horn, and sometimes I have a jug of whiskey. And
you're the definitive good old boy.
I don't know how to go that far.
And he didn't tell us where he got the jug. So.
He got that from out behind his barn.
He's well been broken.
And copper tubing? And
no copper tubing. Actually, it's probably Jack Daniels or something.
Actually, I don't think this is not a motor vehicle.
Licensed and taxed whiskey.
Right.
Right.
Completely legitimate. But, Mr. Chair, and even if we were in camp, we would have, if somebody chose to pull a jug out in the evening, you still have firearms in your immediate proximity or your person's immediate possession if it's hanging in a tree. How would this relate to somebody who had a drink at home and who has firearms there in their immediate possession? I'm a little bit concerned with how broad the language is here, although I do understand the intent. So,
Representative Gianella.
Mr. Chairman, I believe this would affect about 75% of the hunters.
Mm-hmm. At night when they're at camp.
Right.
Well, are they in their vehicles when they're hunting at night in the woods when they're drinking?
Well, if the good old boy's had too much and he's in the passenger side and he's got the sidearm under the seat or on his belt, he may not be driving. I'm just trying to explain that context in the vehicle.
Well, I'm trying to understand how this interferes with hunters because...
Oh, they shouldn't be hunting while intoxicated, no. But if they're sitting in camp afterwards...
Or you're riding back to camp on your horse. And the hunting's done for the day,
well,
and he's kind of heading back.
We're just hearing debate about
it. Yeah, and I'm trying to understand the hunter piece, and I'm, because I know people, so people drink when they hunt, but they can't drink when they're hunting, because that's illegal, right?
They drink after they hunt. They either drink out of sorrow or because of success.
Take it to the next level, Mr. Chair, though. At that time, I mean, if in fact they have finished their hunt, they've sat around their campfire, we don't expect any of those wonderful hunters to get into their vehicle and attempt to drive home after they've been consuming these alcoholic beverages around their campfire, right?
Well, they don't have to. All they have to is have it in their possession.
They could be a passenger in the vehicle being taken to the hospital to deal with the one brewski too many. Representative Gianella.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Sometimes there may be three that don't drink and three that do, and they're all in the same car with firearms.
Well, I detect some dissent about this.
That's fine.
Representative Przanski, go ahead.
That's fine. We'll put it on the record. I mean, I just don't understand why, you know, we fall back on this hunter defense. I mean, I hunt and I own guns, but the one thing I learned from my father was you don't drink and you don't have a firearm next to you. I mean, if there's an emergency that occurs, you got the ability to use the defense, and more than likely one of you can get charged with an offense if you're defending yourself or someone else. I mean, I can take the time, if you want me to go through each of these states as to what they have. This is not rocket scientist stuff. I mean, if we're going to hold people accountable of getting behind a wheel of a driving a vehicle that weighs 2,000 pounds and say that's a deadly weapon, and it is a deadly weapon when they're under the influence,
mm-hmm.
It seems to me that when someone has access on their person or in their immediate possession, a firearm that's loaded and, I mean, I think of the situations where people who are not even under the influence act out of excitement and shoot at something they think is there, only to find out they just killed their friend or their kid. And it just seems to me that we're making a statement that we want people to be responsible gun owners and users, and that we don't think that alcohol and firearms mix. And if we need to make some slight changes as to making sure that the firearm, instead of their immediate possession on their person, so it takes away where the hunter may be out in the tent, and they keep their firearm there and they go out around the fire, I think that's fine. And I have no problem doing that. But I really think that we're at a point where, we're giving a lot of talk about wanting to make sure that we hold people accountable and at the same time getting a message out. And this seems pretty clear to me. Alcohol and guns don't mix. I've pulled back the original bill where 16 states in this country say that you cannot carry a firearm into a place that's a posted premises. I recognize that that's maybe a little bit too much of a leap for us to make today or this session, but I clearly think that if we're going to hold people accountable for drinking and driving under the influence, I think possession of a firearm on their person should be held to that same standard.
All right. I'm going to let everyone else have one more shot at discussion on this, including Representative Pruzanski, and then we'll move to a vote. Representative Cesari?
Well, Mr. Chair, I could see that there might be some practicality to a bill like this in downtown Portland or downtown Eugene or something, but for the biggest part of the state, it isn't practical for people. This is part of their lifestyle where they're out hunting and in camps and that sort of thing, and I just don't see the sense of that. I'm not going to support the Dash 3s. I can see my way to support the Dash 2s, but I think one other aspect of this is, how in the world would you police this? I mean, in hunting season, how could you have enough police personnel to even police such a thing? So it's just an impractical amendment as far as I'm concerned.
Representative Bowman.
Mr. Chair, with all seriousness, I agree with Representative Pruzanski that we continue to talk out of both sides of our mouth this session. You know, we talk about wanting people to be safe and acting responsibly and holding people accountable when they don't act responsibly, but yet we have some sacred thing around hunters that prohibit us from taking positive action. And it makes me think of this news story just last week about these two neighbors who had this long-term feud, and it ultimately ended up with both of them shooting the other one. We don't know if alcohol was involved, at least I don't know at this particular point. But it's clear to me that we need to take some positive steps this session, and this is but a very small step in making sure that people are held accountable for their actions.
All right, thank you. Representative Hansen.
I think opposing this is just ultimate hypocrisy. If guns and alcohol simply don't mix, if hunters are sitting around the campfire and they want to crack the jug open, got no problem with that, but put the guns away, put them, whether they're returned to the vehicle and be locked in a trunk, putting trigger guards on them, there's a lot of different ways that somebody could safely remove themselves from the proximity of the guns while they're drinking. If they want to protect themselves from marauding bears in the middle of the night, don't crack the bottle open. On the other hand, if we look at both gun accidents, somebody that's impaired and tripping while they're carrying a loaded firearm, plus the incredible number of situations that we have in the urban areas where people are killed because they're mixing guns and alcohol, I think this is just real basic. And we've got other states that have done it. These aren't hotbeds of liberalness that have done this, but it's the mixture of the guns and the alcohol. And I don't think I don't want to restrict people's rights to drink. I want to be very careful in terms of restricting people's use of firearms, but the combination is just absolutely deadly.
Representative Pruzanski, Representative Simmons first.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to, for the record, I don't support drinking and shooting guns. I really don't. And many times when I'm out, there is no vehicle. You're a long ways from the vehicle, several days sometimes from the vehicle. And I do support people being responsible with the use of their firearms. If this bill was limited to brandishing or firing, I would have less difficulty with it. But it's broad enough, just possession is just a little too broad for me.
Ask you, would you like to close? Well, Representative Hansen, did you want another quick shot?
Yeah,
I was trying to get one
just,
more.
Just a quick shot. Would the committee be more comfortable if we inserted loaded firearms?
I don't think so, Representative Hammond.
Well, I think the point is, how do you distinguish possession? If you got it sitting in your car and you're sitting 5 feet away in a campfire, it's still in your possession.
We're back to Representative Brzezinski for his closing on his motion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm going to make a motion at this time to modify Section 1, deleting on line 4 where it says, in the person's immediate possession, and inserting on their person. So that line would read, basically finishing off with knowingly has a firearm on their person, or then it continues as the text is. And I also would also change the on line, be at the end of line 2, making it a loaded firearm.
Okay. First of all, we'll need to ask, is there any objection to suspension of the rules to allow conceptual amendment? Seeing no objection, the suspension of the rules is allowed. Mr. Brzezinski is presenting a conceptual amendment to change the dash 3 amendments on line 4 to put the word loaded in front of firearm on the person. Knowingly has a loaded firearm on the person?
On their person.
On their person, all right. Instead of in the person's immediate possession. And also, yes, that was it?
Well, it's actually, the loaded would be in two places. It would be before, on line 3, a person commits a crime, a possession of a loaded firearm.
All right.
And then also, as the chair said, on line 4, would have loaded there, as well as the deletion and insertion of the language on their person.
And let me ask if there's any objection to simply adding this to the Dash 3 Amendment so we can consider it as a package. Seeing no objection, this is added to the Dash 3 Amendment so it can be considered. Representative Brzezinski, further discussion on the Dash 3?
Mr. Chair, I just want to respond to some of the concerns some of the people had. I think it's important that we realize and recognize which states actually have these. I know it's part of the record, but I think for the oral record, I want to make certain the concern about being in maybe a more rural area, Alaska, Colorado, Idaho, which is a neighboring adjacent state, Louisiana, the state that has Welcome to Sportsman Paradise, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, New Mexico, North Carolina, Ohio, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, state I was born in, Texas, Utah, Virginia, another adjacent state of Washington, as well as Wisconsin. So I guess what I would say in making my motion to pass or adopt 3103-3 as it's been conceptually amended by the committee is that there are many states that have looked at this issue, many of them that have very rich rural heritage, that are very rural in their geographic areas, where hunting is, I would say, surpasses the number of hunters that we have in this state, that have recognized the importance to make certain that it's not only a statement, but there's actually a law that you should not be in possession of a loaded firearm when you're under the influence of intoxicants. And that is to be distinguished from someone having a drink where they're not under the influence. And I guess for Representative Simmons, this would not be hopefully someone that's wooey riding under the influence if you're on your horse with your jug and your firearm.
So am I in possession of it then, Mr. Chair, if I may? If it's in the scabbard and I'm sitting on the horse.
It's on the horse's person.
It's on the horse.
You'd be in possession of it. You're not under the influence of intoxicants at the time, even if you've had a beer. It doesn't pertain. You have to go through the test, and it's the same test that could be used for determining whether a person is under the influence if they are driving a motor vehicle. And that's what 7 to 13.
This is the same test here.
Yes, that's the same test that you see under the driving under the influence of intoxicants. So, Mr. Chair, I do make that motion.
All right. Dash 3 amendments as conceptually amended are in front of us. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bowman?
Yes.
Representative Gianella?
No.
Representative Hansen?
Yes.
Representative Simmons?
No.
Representative Sunseri?
No.
Vice Chair Prezant?
Yes.
Mannix?
No. The motion is defeated. Representative Simmons or Representative Janelle, excuse me. Well, let's have a motion here. Does somebody move the dash two amendments to this bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sunseri moves adoption of the dash two amendments to House Bill 3103. This is the committing the crime of brandishing or firing a firearm while under the influence of intoxicants. For the record, I should note that when we refer to under the influence here of intoxicating liquor or influence of a controlled substance, we mean the same thing as under the influence when driving a motor vehicle. Pardon me.
Do we have the dash twos?
I don't have them.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I thought we had them.
Do we not have them?
I don't.
We were passed out earlier.
So we have them last week.
Do you have dash twos?
Nope.
Well, we don't have them on this show.
Oh. I don't.
Let's make a copy. Yeah?
While copies are being made, I'm just making a record here that under the influence of intoxicating liquor or controlled substance means the same as driving a vehicle under the influence, so that the court cases that determine what is under the influence of intoxicating liquor or what or the influence of a controlled substance should have the same import for this kind of crime. Go ahead.
Does this read as the dash three did? 7 through 13 is language lifted from the DUII statutes.
Yes. Also, the dash threes we're talking about a Class A misdemeanor. I would suggest that we consider making the dash twos a Class A misdemeanor rather than a Class B misdemeanor. To emphasize the concern, I'll bring that up and see if, but I'll wait till everybody's got copies of the amendments in front of us. I'm sure I requested them. I'm not sure. I think I requested them. I'm not sure of anything anymore. While we're waiting for that, I can certainly share my copy, but Representative Hansen doesn't have a copy. What about you, Representative Simmons? You don't have a copy? Why don't we share our copies down there, because I'm watching that clock, and I know session is closed.
I gave mine to Ms. Horton.
Do you have yours, Representative Gino? Okay. All right. We have other copies.
The audience has copies.
So now the copies have arrived. All right.
With your okay.
That's my commentary.
All right, now members have their copies. The dash two are in front of us. I would entertain a motion to change Class B misdemeanor to Class A misdemeanor.
I would amend my amendment, Mr. Chair.
All right. Is there any objection to changing Class B to Class A on the dash two amendments? Seeing no objection, Class B is changed to Class A. Representative Janelle, I've prevented you from speaking a couple of times here. Go ahead, please. Not just because it was Representative Pazanski's closing and I didn't want to interrupt him. Please go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Oregon has always been a leader, and they've always done things differently from medical marijuana to assisted suicide. And I'm much more comfortable with brandishing or firing a firearm. And so I will be comfortable with these proposed amendments. Thank you.
All right. Further debate on the dash two with the change to Class A misdemeanor. Representative Bowman.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question. Is there a statute definition for brandishing?
Here it's defined as meaning to exhibit in an aggressive manner. Is there a words and phrases for brandish?
It's not listed separately.
All right, the motion's in front of us. Further discussion? The clerk will call the roll on the motion to adopt the dash two amendment to House Bill 3103 with the change of class B to class A misdemeanor on line 14.
Representative Bowman?
Yes.
Representative Ginnis?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
Yes.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sinceri?
Yes.
Vice Chair Brzezinski?
Respect to the, I'm going to say no.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, before you hit your thing, I'd like to change my yes to no.
Representative Bowman changes her vote to no. The motion is carried. House Bill 3103 with the dash two amendments with class B changed to class A misdemeanor.
Chair.
Is adopted and sent to the floor of the due pass.
Okay.
Excuse me. We just adopted the amendment. The amendment is adopted. Representative Sinceri.
Mr. Chair, I move 3103 as amended with the change to class A of misdemeanor to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
All right, colleagues, you've heard that motion. Further debate? We'll take the roll call on that, please.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
Aye.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sinceri?
Yes.
Vice Chair Brzezinski?
No.
Chair Manning?
Aye. The motion carries. House Bill 3103,
Chair,
as amended, is sent to the floor with the due pass. Representative Brzezinski?
Notice a minority report on this bill, 3103, as passed out.
All right, Representative Brzezinski serves notice of a minority report on House Bill 3103. And looking at the clock and looking at the agenda, I'm going to mention one. First of all, this concludes the work session of House Bill 3103. We have up, I'm going to let folks know, 2593 will not proceed any further, so it shouldn't be on any further agendas. If it's on the agenda for tomorrow, forget
okay.
it.
Carrier.
So I'll designate myself as the carrier on 3103. And again, 2593, I'll just list as sort of dead. And we'll stop there on this agenda and pick up tomorrow morning. We weren't able to give timely notice of hearing on the HJRs and regarding the victims' rights, so they are reset for tomorrow. First up tomorrow morning will be Mr. Fedanke at 8 o'clock. And we are adjourned. Thank you.